Let's go to Revelation 21. I've talked to you about how that I believe that Pentecost brought heaven to earth, how that it literally changed time and space, if we could understand it, if we can only see. And by faith is the only way that we can understand. If you look around, just look at your life yesterday, and for you to say that it is finished, it is perfect, I need nothing, by one offering I've been perfected forever, to say that is absolutely ridiculous. To believe it and to live by that is 1,000 times more ridiculous. But that's the meaning of faith. For me, I see already that every knee has bowed, every tongue is confessing that Jesus Christ is Lord. I see it's perfect. I see it's finished. I owe my thoughts and my emotions nothing. And where I, if perchance there's a place that I don't see it, I see Jesus by faith, that I see that He said this. He said it's finished. So there's nothing I have to be upset about. There's nothing I have to give breath to. Now, this is mind-blowing. And the question is, do you believe it? I can't make you believe it.
Can I say something here? To me, this begs the ultimate question of that. I think intellectually, I know I believe that. But the question is then your response to life, just like the conversation out there. Do you just ignore things, blow things off? What is the responses? Is responding to things getting out of the rest, or is there rest within the response?
The only thing that we do is we love our neighbor as ourself. We see through whatever is going on, and we see it's almost like by our laying down our life for that person, we call forth that perfection in him or her. The minute you stand up for your rights, then you've returned to the kingdom of darkness. And this is true in big things and in little things. Why else would we pray for our enemies? Not only pray for them, why else and how could we else possibly love our enemies? And love, by its very definition, means we prefer their interest over our own. And we can do this because the sensory world is not our reality. Our reality is the finishness and the grace and the mercy of Christ. That is our only reality. The apparent things that are going on, we respond to from that position. That's the way I see it. I don't think there are any exceptions to it. You know, the issue that you're talking about, if you you see that person as the Samaritan, that is, beat up, lying by the side of the road, then your view of that person will become automatically totally different. And that's what we see from the position of faith.
Yeah, this to me says that's the labor to enter back into rest where you can see clearly.
Right. It doesn't have anything to do with that other person. It has to do with destroying idolatry within you. Just think of what idolatry is. Idolatry says that there is something other than God Himself that I'm giving breath to, that I'm giving importance to.
There's chirping idols all around.
Well, and that's, remember, I mean, Paul said, above all things, flee idolatry. And the whole, you know, the Talmud is full of this. The idea that if you keep the law perfectly in every point except one, you have one idol, then it's as though you kept nothing. And yet, on the other hand, if you manage to have destroyed all idolatry, then it's as though you have kept the entire law. Because by destroying all idolatry, you will have, by definition, be in faith. You can mouth the word Jesus or Christian all you want, but if you're still giving breath to the same things that the Gentiles give breath to, then you have an idol. Or idolatry, you have more than one. You can't just have one idol. It's the whole idea of the four horsemen. You know, first comes the white horse going up forth, conquering and to conquer. That's your idea. Immediately followed by he's got a bow but no arrows. Next comes the red horse. And he comes forth to kill, because he's not going to kill with a great sword. He's got a hidden dagger, the assassin's sword. So finally, you know, then comes death and everything else. But the whole mystery of you can't just let out one horse. And every time you have an idea about how you think things should be, then you're letting out the white horse. And the guy is sitting on the white horse, and he's going forth conquering and to conquer. That's what your idea was. But when you let out that one, then three others follow, and then you have to have another idea. So you let out another white horse, and pretty soon you've got a stampede running through the land. Do you understand this? To say it's finished, to say that And it was to say this, and I saw new heaven and new earth, or new land. For the first heaven and the first earth were passed away, and there was no more sea. And I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a great voice out of heaven saying, behold, the tabernacle of God is in men, or with men, and he will dwell in them, and they shall be his people, and God himself shall be in them, and be their God. God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes. There shall be no more death, neither sorrow nor crying, neither shall be any more pain, for the former things are passed away. And he that sat upon the throne said, behold, I make all things new. And he said unto me, write, for these words are true and faithful. And he said unto me, it is done. It is finished. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. I will give unto him that is athirst of the fountain of the water of life freely. He that overcometh shall inherit all things, and I will be his God, and he shall be my son. Now, depends on who your life is. If your life is you, then you've got to deal with all the issues. If you're making judgments by your senses, then you have to deal with all these things. You have to plan and scheme. But if your life is Him, if for you to live as Christ and to die is gain, then chapter 21 here is eternally true. Because your sustenance and your satisfaction doesn't come from the solution of issues. It comes only from Him. He alone, you eat only of His flesh for your sustenance, satisfaction, and fulfillment. You drink only of His blood for your worth. And so what happens around you is His rod and His staff. And if you see, they should comfort you. Not just comfort you every once in a while, but always. That's why it says, come out of her, my people, come out of her. Who's the her? The her is the world of cause and effect. And this land here that we've talked about, that we've seen in Revelation 21, is the land of mercy and grace. When the school was starting, the one four-letter word that was not permitted was fair. And I had this 100,000 times with the kids over the years. Well, that's not fair. You want fair? Let me tell you about fair.
This overcometh, and that just directly this.
Yes, you overcome by the blood of the Lamb and the word of your testimony, and that you love not your life even unto death. Go to Revelation 12. Let's look at that. That's why the book of Revelation is always true. It's not some future thing. It's been true since Abel. It's been true since creation. It just shows what's going on. I mean, how many we've had? There's well more than enough blood to fill the valley of Megiddo. I mean, to fill the valley at Megiddo or Armageddon. I mean, think of the blood that you alone have shed. Now listen to verse 12, or chapter 12. Go to verse 7. And there was a war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon, and the dragon fought and his angels, and prevailed not, neither was their place found any more in heaven. And the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceiveth the whole world. He was cast out into the earth, into the earthen vessels. I'm reading about more. The last few months I've just been consumed with studying everything that can be found, and I've read it before, but I'm looking at it with these eyes about what was going on in the church between, you know, the crucifixion and AD 70 when the temple was destroyed, and what was going on from the time the temple was destroyed until 135 when the last Bar Kokhba rebellion. And it's interesting in that there was in the Didache and other writings of Tertullian and others, there was a formula, and that is, before a person was accepted into the fellowship or into the mystery, they had to confess that Satan had no more power over them. Well, and the idea that the confession was based on the same things that Christ's temptation was based on. So you had to say that you had no more interest in the same things that Christ said he had no more interest in when Satan tempted him. And then you were baptized, and the baptized was your burial. But you broke the bonds of the ties, the value systems. You can't eat at the table of the Lord and the table of demons. You can't do it. And if you want to eat at the table of the Lord, then the only thing that can give you sustenance and satisfaction, fulfillment and worth is the table itself, is what's served on the table, the bread and the wine. But if you're gaining sustenance and satisfaction, or negatively, if you're getting upset because different things don't happen, that means you're still eating at the table of demons. Do you understand this? So listen, he said, so the Satan was cast out into the earth, not on the earth, into the earth in vessels. And I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, now is come salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ. For the accuser of our brethren is cast down, which accused them before our God day and night. And they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony. And they loved not their lives unto death. The word of their testimony isn't, oh, look what Jesus did to me. The word of their testimony is Jesus Christ. For me to live is Christ, to die is gain. Therefore rejoice, you heavens, and you that dwell in them. But woe to the inhabitants of the earth. If your life is still on the earth, if you're still making value judgments based on your sensory perception, then your life is on the earth. But woe to them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and of the sea. For the devil has come down unto you, having great wrath, because he knoweth that he hath but a short time. Now, the whole idea, I mean, it's not like the scary movies you see. It's much more subtle. Unless your life is hid with Christ in God, in the New Jerusalem, then you are an inhabitor of the earth. It doesn't matter what your name, what you put on your ideas. If you give breath to the things on this earth and the same thing everybody else gives importance to that's on the earth, then you dwell on the earth by definition. It doesn't matter what you say. Your words are meaningless. It's how you live.
Seeing the difference between our words are what we use to manipulate ourselves, others, and the world system, and that's the whole structure or purpose of language, is to interface with all of that. But this third heaven that we've talked about, which can't be talked about, is where we live, and the words are meaningless.
Right. The test of whether you live in that place, in this place that we just saw came down from heaven, adorned as a bride, prepared for her husband, this place, the only test is how you respond to stimuli. And that's the only purpose of the test. That's the only purpose of time and space, is to see whether there's anything that can take you off that mercy seat. It's called a mercy seat for good reason. You spend your life learning how to do stuff and how to solve problems and 1 + 1 = 2 and all of this, all of the other things that are really just cause and effect. I don't know if I've ever explained it right, but if your parameters are sufficiently limited, you can prove anything. You can prove to yourself you're king of the world. You can prove to yourself that you're in control. You can prove to yourself that, you know, that's why I love dealing with addicts, because the addict is just an expression of each how much you're addicted to yourself. And so people go out and use, and then 3 weeks later, they don't want any of the restrictions. And so, am I going to be treated that way your whole life? Well, probably. You mean you're not going to trust me? Probably not. Because you're an addict. So you either got to say, but you can prove to yourself, my God, I've been clean for 3 weeks or 4 weeks or whatever. I'm right now. I'm okay. What happens? We've seen it a million times. So you prove to yourself these ridiculous constructs because you create and you keep compressing the boundaries of your thought process. And I've seen it over and over. It doesn't matter whether you're an addict or not. That just shows the rest of us how the rest of us are addicted to ourselves. You know, you demanding your rights is just an addiction to self. What?
There was a thing on the news last night. This real famous, big time scientist who's done like the landmark studies for menopausal women. It just turned out, they just found out that what he did was his research on what happened to women after menopause showed that they got better. So he phonied that data because it would call into question his theories based on what happened before menopause. His ass is going to prison, and doctors have been mistreating women, and it's a huge deal. But he had to make the parameters small enough to prove what it was the information he brought forward.
We have a whole culture that thinks wrongly about, you know, because of Margaret Mead. She created this idyllic culture of the savage, that they were pure and good, and so this whole liberal theology was everything is environmental. That's the reason you're so screwed up. No, it isn't. You're screwed up because you're sin. Not that you do sin, you are sin.
So I mean, I didn't respond before I got here.
Yeah, I mean the whole idea of these idiot scientists that happens all the time. I mean, I'm not saying all scientists are idiots, but I'm saying that Margaret Mead was an idiot and this doctor was an idiot because he lied with data that affected the whole thousands, millions of people. I mean, the whole value system that you have in life came from making the parameters small enough so you could think you proved something. You know, I've said a million times, all of science is based on an assumption, the linearity of time. If time isn't linear, and the scriptures prove it isn't, because the angel of the Lord stands up and says, when the mystery of God is finished, time is no more. What would your world look like if time wasn't linear? Well, you affect that. That's why we are just this. It says Noah condemned the world because he was his faithfulness in building the ark. Well, we condemn the world by our faithfulness in seeing that there is life without time. The gift of God is that eternal life. And we see the New Jerusalem wherever we look. We respond to stimuli, not ever based on the senses. God is our first source, last source, all the sources in between. There is no other source. But you have to filter that. Well, no, this means that according to all the stuff over here that I have back here in this cabinet. And then I go over to this hard drive and it says a little bit different. So I've got to, and pretty soon you take this mystery of the finishedness of God and you have twisted it and turned it and it made it into a mind. It's the same way you made yourself. You've got to come to the understanding that you are a golem. The legends of the golem are true. You have taken hunks of clay and made yourself from the moment of your first dawn of self-awareness. And you've created a false being. And that false being has been masquerading as you your entire life. And now you try to apply God to that? I mean, this isn't good news to this false being. This is the worst news there is. Because it's tested in the smallest intimate details of your life. And that's why community stopped.
Just think of operating without time. I saw that as tied to the denial of self. You can't even think about that concept using your senses.
Well, that's why I've said so all along, you know, go to 2 Corinthians 10.
Who's that?
Good thing you didn't make that
2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 3. I mean, you can come to Bible study and be all, go back to your room and, oh, shit. You know, everything's wrong. You create 50, you can create a new reality every 5 seconds in your mind. And every new reality that you create, by definition, God isn't in it. So you're trying to put God in a place that he isn't. You turn that thing off.
I'm doing it right now, just...
Be a little patient. We're good.
2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 3. For though we walk in the flesh, we do not war after the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds, casting down imaginations, and every high thing or high place that exalteth itself against the knowledge of God, and bringing into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ. Now, that's what it means. That's the warfare that you do is internal. There is no thought that you can have that can stand against it is finished. There's only one thing that can exist in here, it is finished. That's the New Jerusalem. There's only one thing in here that can exist. By one offering, I've been perfected forever. That's Christ in you, the hope of glory. All these other idiot thoughts that go on in your mind and your little opinions and your little ideas are crap. So are mine. It's finished. If you don't believe that, if you don't know that, this isn't the place for you. And if you're listening on the internet, you shouldn't even be listening. You should run like hell. And don't send me any emails. Send them to John.
John?
No, Skippy. Skippy. Can you, I mean, you gotta, there's gotta be, I know you well enough, there's a sense in you that hears this. And don't try to reinterpret it based on your own experience. Because your own experience will pollute it. It's just, it's finished. By faith I see it in all things. I have been perfected for one off by one offering. Whenever God looks at you, he sees Christ. Whenever he looks at Christ, he sees you. And that's because of Christ in you, the hope of glory. That's the only hope. That's why the cross is the principle, the first principle, the very essence. And the cross is your death. Not that you've got to try to die. You've got to reckon that you've been dead for 2,000 years. He was the last Adam. If he was the last Adam, who are you? I'm sorry. What, you were going to say something?
Forgot.
Okay, once you've seen this, then listen to the next verse. Casting down imaginations and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, and bringing into captivity every single thought to the obedience of Christ, and having in a readiness to revenge all disobedience once your obedience is fulfilled. If you can hear this, if this can penetrate the thousand walls in your mind that you've created, if you can hear it once, then your obedience is fulfilled. You know it. But it's this sloppy crap that you go getting, you, just like you're seduced by little shiny things that you're attracting to you, you're seduced by your thoughts and your judgments because it takes you away from its finished. And those are the ones that, the most important ones. The outward crap is meaningless. That will flow once the inward crap is dealt with. I went over my time again. Anybody have any? Any bells go off? Anybody have a breakthrough, or are you still sitting there? All righty, take it, big guy.